Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Thank you so much for 10K on Gmail. I can't believe it. I always told myself that I would change, become a healthier, better person, unsubscribe from Domino's, but I think the lesson here is don't change for anybody, even yourself.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Tuesday, October 20th. I'm J.E. Skeets, and alongside me today, we have the international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends.
We got the man making the magic happen, J.D.
Hello.
There he is. And today, filling in for both Tass and Trey, which, as we all know, are some wide-ass Birkenstocks and some shockingly small camouflaged Crocs to fill. It's our guest, who is an NBA.com senior writer and a regular No Dunk stream team member and the creator of the hashtag Well Actually Movement. It's John Schumann. Shu, what's up, man?
Fellas, what's going on?
Appreciate
you. Shout out to the stream team.
Yeah, so you are. That's for sure. You're in the stream team once in a while, are you?
Yeah, you know, works out every once in a while where I'm sitting at my desk and y'all are going live and I happen to be available to listen in and maybe contribute some tasty puns in the chat. So it
and
works.
Some hashtag well actuallys, of course.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure. You got to keep us honest. We appreciate you jumping on here, Shu. We're actually going to get into an article that you just wrote for NBA.com on the 10 most intriguing free agents ahead of next season. So that's going to be fun. Bunch of questions about your list and some of the guys on it, maybe some of the guys missing from it. But before we get to that, I can't remember. I know we haven't had you on No Dunks officially. It feels like your name is name dropped every 10 minutes on this damn podcast, but this is the first time you're officially on No Dunks. So for those that maybe don't know you or how you got into writing, like, how long have you been writing now for NBA.com? Because I know it's been a minute.
15 years. So
wow.
I started in 2005. When I started, I was actually an MBA employee. And then in 2008 is when we went to Turner. Mm. So, yeah, so 15 years. 2005-06 was my first season. My first finals was 05-06 was the Heat. So we were staying on the beach and it was wonderful. And then in Dallas, we had this hotel with a gym like next to the office. So we played basketball every day and it was the best finals ever. And things have got progressively worse since then,
right,
to the point where I was covering the finals without actually being there this year.
So. Was that the first time?
You know what? I was not at the 2010 finals.
Okay.
We had a big staff at that point and I was the one who stayed at home, but I've been to everyone except 2010 and this year, obviously.
What were you doing before you were writing for NBA.com? Like, how did you get into that?
Oh, I guess, boy. It's a long story. I went to school for architecture, worked at a couple different architecture firms for the first 6 or 7 years out of college. A friend of mine at the time was working for working as an architecture firms, I realized that it wasn't necessarily for me. So I started dabbling in internet stuff, both design and coding or whatever. A friend of mine at the time worked for a video game company. So I went there. Shout out to Rockstar Games.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. I worked in the web department at Rockstar Games for about a year.
Okay.
Worked on the website.
Are you a secret character in GTA? Can we find you?
No. I'm in the. If you go into San Andreas, though, I'm in the book, as part of the staff or whatever.
Oh, okay. So, well, that's pretty cool.
I worked on the websites for San Andreas and Midnight Club 3, I think it was.
Okay.
It was a racing game, which was a lot of fun. And then a couple other, you know, smaller games or whatever. So I worked there for about a year in the web department, basically doing web stuff. And at the same time, I was doing off to the side, I created a site called Nets Daily.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
oh,
basically,
was that you? Yeah.
Wow. Basically to practice or basically, yeah, to work on my internet skills. I like doing like database, you know, PHP and I guess MySQL, like that kind of stuff to figure out how to take a database and put it on the web, basically, and started writing or doing stuff there. The Nets themselves like had me do like a freelance column for them like once a week, for which I was only given tickets. So I was
doing
that on the
side. Were you a Nets fan, Shu?
Like, yeah. Okay. So, my brother was I was a Bulls fan from 1984 to 1998.
Okay.
Those years exactly. And you can figure out why.
Yeah.
And then my brother was a big Nets fan. And he passed away, unfortunately, in 96, I think it was. Yes, 96.
Wow.
And, you know, he like, my last memories of him are just sitting around watching Nets games, you know, the days of Rex Walters and Kenny Anderson and Chris Morris, that group.
Right.
And so, yeah, so when the Nets became good, sort of in the post-Bulls world, then I became a Nets fan with the kid and Kmart and Richard Jefferson and that group. So going to games, you know, I'm a Jersey guy through and through. Did Nets Daily, and then I guess it was 2005, the NBA.com job opened up. I interviewed with my man Rob Peterson. Shout out to Rob Peterson.
Yep.
Athletic editor.
Yep.
Got that job. So
wow.
Yeah. It's a I wouldn't ask anybody to repeat that path to
really?
To MBA writing.
I don't know.
It
sounds pretty cool. Yeah. Dabble in architecture, then get into video games and start your own site and then you work for NBA.com. No, I love it.
It's almost George Costanza, you know, you're trying to be an architect, then you just land a job in the NBA. It's like, you know, with the Nets.
Yeah, Costanza with the Yankees.
Exactly. Yeah.
I had an epiphany in my second architecture job. And I was a draftsperson, basically. You know, I wasn't a real architect. And one guy I had to do this wall section, which is basically, you know, the details of how a wall is put together. And one of the architects was explaining it to me. And I just thought, I was like, man, this dude cares about this crap a lot more than I do. And I was like, so that was my epiphany. Like, I got to get out of here. Yeah. And fortunately, my friend rescued me and got to do video games for a little while.
Yeah, but then the funny part about that is years later, I'm sure someone at a party is going, wow, this Schumann guy cares about Todd McCullough way more than I do.
That's true.
A little creepy, yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, pinball wizard, Todd McCullough. That's amazing. Sorry, go ahead, Lee.
Yeah, no, you're pretty well known within the NBA community, the players and coaches and everyone. When was the first sort of big name or big moment where someone talk to you about an article you've written about or ask for more information or something like that? When was the moment you're like, oh, wow, people are reading this stuff?
Oh, that's a good question. I guess I get more stuff like that from coaches than players. And so there'll be every once in a while. Like, I remember first time talking to Terry Stotts. This wasn't all that long ago. I said, hey, I'm John Schumann. He's like, I know who you are. I was like, oh, okay.
Wow.
I was like, all right, thanks. That's pretty cool. You know, from my very first year, though, I remember the first time Chris Paul came to New Jersey, and he was a rookie at the time, too. So my first year writing was his rookie year. And I interviewed him at the time. And, like, I remember, you know, him later at All-Star or whatever, him telling me that, like, oh, his dad, told him that I wrote something about him or something like that. So I was like, oh, you know, that's kind of cool that, like, you know, I was like, all right, maybe I got to watch what I'm mind my P's and Q's. But no, I mean, you know me, like I just follow the numbers basically when I'm writing. So yeah. I, if somebody has an issue with what I wrote, just say, hey, it's the numbers that don't like you, not me.
And that's where Will actually began, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
That's awesome. Okay, that's cool. I'm glad we asked that because I knew a little bit about that, bit about your backstory, but not the rock star part. So that's pretty pretty neat for some of the new listeners, I'm sure, or people that follow your work on NBA.com. So,
yeah, in fact, over the hiatus, I tried to get back into San Andreas and try to finish it. And now maybe I'll get back in. It didn't even come close. So
no.
I'm going back.
Are you a big video game guy?
No. I have a PS2, and that's the most recent.
Wow, I have a PS3, and I thought that was pretty lame.
Yeah, I have a PS2, and I have San Andreas and Midnight Club and some NBA games, and that's about it.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get into a little NBA talk here. Again, the article that you recently wrote, 10 most intriguing free agents ahead of the 2020-21 season. I was going to hashtag well actually you on that title right there, 2020-21. Can't we just go 21? I mean, do we got to put the 20 in because of the draft? What do you think?
That's a good question. Yeah, I guess. I mean, but I don't write the headline, you know. I'm the writer, I'm not the headline writer.
He's passing the buck. Who's writing that headline? Who's got that one?
Good question. Might be Hartzell one of those dudes.
Oh, awesome. All right. Well, anyway, it's a great article. I love all your work at NBA.com. And we're going to, again, like go through it. We got a bunch of questions about it. I thought we could start with a guy that wasn't on the list, and you pointed this out right from the jump. You excluded Anthony Davis because, you know, we know he's opting out. He says he's signing with the Lakers. He's not going anywhere, so he's not really going to be a free agent, even though if technically I guess he is. What type of contract do you think he ultimately signed? It's something we debated on the show, I guess, last week.
I think it's fairly simple. I mean, he obviously gets the max, but he's 8 years in, so I would think that he would give himself the opportunity to sign a new contract when he's 10 years in, and then he can get the 35% of the max. I have no information on that, but that just seems logical. So I would think it's a 3-year deal with an option in the third year to allow him to become a free agent in 2022, and then therefore he can get a new contract after 10 years and then get the 35% of the cap max at that point.
I think that does make sense too, and it's like a good balance, I would say too. Lili, we talked about it, like, he is an injury-prone guy. In fact, John Schumann, of all people, I would always remember you would tweet out like a running list every time Anthony Davis like got like a little new injury. You had like a crazy list going all the body parts he's hurt.
It was bizarre, just like, and it's all like 5 games here, one game there, and it was I have to go back and find that and see if I can update it. It's been a year at least since the last time I put that out there.
Well, I guess this year was probably his healthiest year, maybe as a pro. Off the top of my head, I mean, I don't remember him missing too many games. I know he got. I think just before the shutdown, he missed a couple, but that was more out of precaution. But a lot of those injuries were a lot of sort of muscle strains and groins and hamstrings and things like that, weren't they? Is that right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's like Shu said too. Yeah. It's always like these weird little sort of like, you know, I want to call them sort of minor injuries. He just picks up a lot of them over his career. And that's what I was going to say. This is a nice balance. I'm with you, Shu, the 2+1. Because it's like, again, for a guy that does get injured a lot, you know, it's still a couple of years of max money. I mean, you're locked in. Heaven forbid something drastic were to happen to him. But then you also have that idea to get to that super max 35% when you can. So that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's fairly simple. And he played 62 of 71 in the regular season this year. Lee, after, well, the year before was as much about his
forcing him
his way out of New Orleans than injuries. So
okay, well, let's get to the list. At number one, maybe a little shocking, maybe for some people, I don't know, Raptors guard Fred VanVleet. So what makes FVV the most intriguing free agent to you, Shu?
That's a good question. I don't necessarily like. Even looking back at it, I was like, really? Is he number one? Like, I'm still not 100. Like, but I think it says a lot about this free agent class in itself that it's in total, it's not all that intriguing, and that the trade market may be more interesting than the free agent market this off season. I keep wanting to say this summer, but we're already past the summer. But VanVleet, I mean, he's a starter on a championship contender, and, you know, Dragic is similar in that way, but Van Vliet's like 8 years younger than Dragic. And he's intriguing in that he's sort of, you know, he's done the whole bet on himself thing twice already in his career, and now is his chance to cash in. Like I said, he's on a title contender. If he leaves, that obviously hurts the Raptors quite a bit. I think he's an impact player on both ends of the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just found, like, of the group, you know, there's, you know, Brandon Ingram is a better player, but there's less intrigue with him because, you know, it seems doubtful that the Pelicans would let him walk.
Right. Him being restricted. Yeah. And Van Vliet, like, let's talk about some of the rumors that we've heard. Knicks possibly interested. Pistons possibly interested. Two teams that are, like, desperately need a competent point guard to, like, run things and to set a culture a little bit. I saw Stephen Bondi, I think it was, of New York Daily News. He's thinking Malcolm Brogdon's contract with the Pacers could be a barometer of what Van Vliet could expect. So that's, you know, a 4-year, $85 million, I think Brogdon was. Does that sound like something you would expect Van Vliet to get, you know, that 20-plus million per year, either from, of course, the Raptors or another team?
Yeah, that sounds right. I think that's a good... Yeah, it was, 485 over four was Brogdon. I was looking back at the last couple of years of restricted free agency just for the Ingram question.
Mm-hmm.
And, 85 over four. That sounds right.
Yeah.
And, it's the Knicks. It's kind of interesting because he doesn't match necessarily the timeline of a Barrett and whoever they get in the draft
right
this year and Robinson. Detroit makes a little bit more sense if they still believe that Blake Griffin is worth keeping around or is the centerpiece for that team for the next 2 years. So I'll be fast. I'm curious. I have no idea. I don't know how loyal he is to Toronto. Hmm. How much he would want to play for Dwayne Casey again. How much he would want to live in New York. Like, I don't know those factors. So it'll be interesting to see.
How much do you think the Raptors would be prepared to overpay maybe just to keep him? Do you think he can get, $100 million out of 4 years?
No, because if they really care about cap space next year in 2021, then there's got to be a limit to what they can pay Van Vliet. Obviously, Lowry comes off the books, but still, I imagine there's going to be some sort of salary cap smoothing or something. You know, I'm not well versed in the cap necessarily as far as what it's going to be in 2021. But they've mm-hmm. got there's a limit to how much they can spend if they really want to go shopping next year.
Yeah.
Well, the 2021 offseason sort of looms over this entire list, right? Like with some of these teams' decisions, Dragic is another good example of a lot of these guys of like, how much do you really want to go all in on one of these guys on your list or someone not there? But then possibly, screw yourself or a chance at a big, big name in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously, Antetokounmpo is the big one, and he could put that to rest by signing an extension.
It's true.
But then there's a bunch of guys, and then the other thing is there's a bunch of the good free agents in 2021 are guys coming off their rookie deals, and then they could sign. And those guys are eligible for extensions this summer too. So the 2021 free agency class could dry up a little bit before we. Before we get there.
True.
So that's another factor.
Lee, I'll ask you this. Van Vliet, and then Chu, you can chime in as well. Anyone concerned about Van Vliet as like a $20 million plus player, at the age he is? I mean, he's not like 21 or 22 or something like that, or no concern at all because like Chu said, he brings it on both ends. You know what you're getting. He was like basically an 18 point per game scorer on a really, really good team in Toronto. But like, are you worried at all if you're, let's say you're the Knicks or the Pistons and you're like, here's $22 million a year, go nuts?
Not really for me. I think he's worth it. I think he's earned that money because he's a pretty stable player. He contributes on both ends. He's going to have those bigger moments every now and again where he has the huge game. Mm-hmm. But he's also not afraid to step up when the team needs it. So I think if you get a two-way player, even if he's not the sort of superstar point guard, he's just a reliable veteran who's going to continue to improve. And you can trust him late in games as well. Mm-hmm. I think he's worth it. That's what the market is as well these days. I mean, you're going to have to pay to get someone like that. And so for the Raptors, that's why I asked about if they may have to overpay, because I think he's a very important part of the team, even if he's not at that level of where maybe Kyle Lowry was at his best. I think he's just so critical to what they do. And I think that's why Masai really probably does want to keep him, even if it does cost him a few extra bucks, and figure out next season. You know, I know Pascal's, his huge extension is kicking in as well. But I wouldn't want to let that guy go for nothing, because that's what the Raptors are also facing at the moment. I think mm-hmm. it's better to keep him as an asset. And if he doesn't quite live up to it, I think it's still tradable, that contract. It's not one of those just gigantic contracts that is a bit of an albatross. It is still $20 million contracts these days are pretty easy to trade. So if I'm the Raptors, I certainly invest in that risk, because I think he's worth it anyway. And if he's not, I think you can move on from him pretty easily.
Yeah. What do you think, Shu?
I do think that it's possible that he's more valuable on a really good team that is a more of an ensemble cast. Like he is a important cog on a really good ensemble. Then, like, he's more valuable in that situation than maybe he would be in New York as the best player on the team. Like,
I 100% agree. If you 100%
put him,
agree with that.
If you put him on the Knicks roster right now, he is their best player, clearly. Like, and yeah. Okay. He's 6'1", let's remember. Like, he's not creating his own shot. When he drives, he's looking to pass. He's yep. not a good finisher at the rim. He's obviously a great defender, but he's a great defender in what is the best, group of defenders in the league right now. And so he's not a guy you latch on to the opponent's best player, unless that opponent's best player is a point guard. So he's not like he's not guarding the Kawhis and the LeBrons of the world. He's right. guarding.
But he did guard Steph Curry. He did guard Steph Curry pretty well.
Steph Curry and Kemba Walker. Yeah, you put him on those two guys, but you don't put him on the bigger, the big wings of the NBA. So like, there's definitely he's really valuable in his role with the Raptors. Like I said, I wouldn't want him to be the best player. As much as I love him, believe me, I live vicariously through Fred VanVleet, his twin brother Chris Chioza, and their Puerto Rican cousin JJ Barea. Those are the three guys that I live vicariously through.
That's because you play like all three of those guys.
I love those, and we might, JJ's playing days might be over. Chioza, I think, is going to stick around as a third string point guard. And believe me, I want to see Fred VanVleet have a ton of, but I don't want him to be the best player on my team.
I think that's spot on. That's why the Brogdon comparison makes a lot of sense. Not even just what the potential contract is that Bondi's throwing out there, how it could be comparable. It's that idea of like, I love Malcolm Brogdon. Hell yeah, I would want him on my team. But there's no way I want him to be the best player on the roster, just like VanVleet. Like, you imagine if the Knicks do throw crazy money at him, it's 25 plus per year, and he's the best player, and it's like, I feel like the Knicks fans would be like, all right, VanVleet, you got to average like 27 per game. You know, it's like not fair. It's like, no, that's not what he should be doing. But hopefully it's more of like a $20 million contract. If it's him, I hope he stays with the Raptors too. But yeah, because he's got to be a piece. He can't be the man. But you can get into that situation when you paid over $25 million, then you're looked at as the man. It's like a Vucevic type thing. It's like, are you the man? All right, go to town. But it's like, he's not best suited for that, right?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, heck, go to game 7, the end of game 7 against the Celtics. Who had fouled out? Had Lowry fouled out? Is that right?
Lowry had, I think, yep.
Yeah, and so it was like, all right, Fred, get us a three, and he couldn't do, he couldn't do it. And so, just saying, like, he's not going to create a ton of stuff for himself. He's going to, be a make shots in an offense that moves the ball and finds the open man.
For sure.
Danielle has taken up painting. Oil painting, acrylic painting, other painting. I don't know what it is, but it's just incredible. If I can convince her to open up a Shopify store, I know she'll be hearing the... Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, yeah, just do it, to the first real life store stage, see, you made a sale, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage? How about that? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap, offering outdoor outfits, or paintings, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From the all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Here's some information. Just like entrepreneur David Scott Martin of Antique Candle did for No Dunks on Shopify. How about that? And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nodunks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/nodunks now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/nodunks.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, let's keep it going here. You're talking about Ingram, number two on your list, restricted, of course. You said in that article, it will be interesting to see what the final price tag is for him. Because, like, I'm with you. He's likely not going anywhere. But what type of deal does BI sign? Best guess, Shu, at ultimately what David Griffin tries to lock him up for?
It's got to be north of $20 million a year. I was looking back 2 years ago, LaVine and Aaron Gordon both signed four-year deals, one for 78, one for 76, and their numbers weren't nearly as good as Ingram's the year before. So that's so it's got to be north of 20. I don't think it's a max, which would start at like 28, 28 and a half or something like that. I can't imagine it's that. So
split the difference type thing?
23 a year, and then for however many years. I don't know if he's a great fit next to Zion Williamson long term. That's my hesitation. I mean, I distinctly remember a game. I wish I remembered which one it was, but I was watching where it was like 5 minutes into the game, and Zion had touched the ball once. And it was one of these catch and give it right back to somebody touches too. So he had the ball for like 3 seconds through the first 5 minutes, and there's 7 minutes to go in the first quarter, and Ingram just dribbles the ball up the floor and shoots a pull up mid range jumper with like 18 on the shot clock, and I'm just like, oh, yeah. Like this dude, I don't know. Like he's really talented. I mean, his jumper is incredibly improved. That's where the improvement came from him this year. But just, I don't know if he's going to sort of swallow too many possessions when he's on the floor with Williamson, like, and not necessarily making the most of Zion Williamson when they're on the floor together.
Yeah, he's a really interesting one to me because his people are going to be expecting a max, I think, considering the improvement that he showed this season. He's young. And they were also upset that David Griffin didn't extend him last season when he could have. So if they come in with what they consider a low ball offer, it'll be interesting to see what happens because I think they still take it in the end. But I also don't think he's a great fit with Zion there. And I wonder about his long-term future in New Orleans. But I think for Griffin and the Pelicans, they have to lock him up at least now as an asset. Even though he's restricted, obviously he can't. They're not going to let him go for free. But it's going to be so interesting to me to see just how those negotiations go because, you know, MVP, most improved player, all-star, clearly his game improved you know, across the board everywhere. Even his playmaking got a little bit better. Mm-hmm. So all those factors considered, and again, for a young guy, his team, I think, are going to be expecting the max. I think they just are. And, you know, I mean, Griffin, I don't think is going to want to pay him the max, but where they fall and how they get to that point, I think, is going to be very, very interesting.
He's only 23.
He's young.
And it feels like he's been around for forever. He's only 23. But the Pelicans have, like, a lot of different directions they can go with Holiday, you know, a possible Holiday trade. Even just when you think about Derek Favors, like, he was an important role player for them. They played well when he was on the floor. They played well when he was on the floor with Williamson.
He's only 28,
yeah,
as you said,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and he's unrestricted. So, like, would they bring him back, or do they just turn over the center position to Jackson Hayes? They have a lot of different ways they can go. With Ingram being a restricted free agent, I guess there's some maybe sign-and-trade possibilities with mm-hmm. teams that have cap space, I guess. But you got to figure out, well, what's in it for New Orleans in that regard, too. So, there's intrigue, I guess, in regards to both the price tag and, you know, what they really feel about the long-term fit.
Right. They don't have a coach yet either, right? I mean, I keep forgetting that. There's been so much movement recently that I'm like, who has a coach now? Who doesn't? Where is Doc again? You know, D'Antoni, where's he? Like, yeah, the Pelicans, I don't think, as of recording this with Shu here this morning on Tuesday, October 20th, they don't have one yet. And yeah. I mean, I'm sure any coach that comes in there is gonna be like, "Yeah, I can make this work." Yeah, 23-year-old scorer in Ingram, and we got Zion and all these pieces. Yeah, I'll make it work. Like, they're not gonna say nope. maybe you got to move BI. I don't want to come and take this job unless he's gone. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. Putting him at number two again, restricted. But what will be the price tag? You're throwing out sort of 23. It sounds like per year. Shoot, Lee, I'm with you. I think his camp's like, come on. I'm 23 years old. I'm already an all-star. You traded Anthony Davis to get me, basically, you know. I just lock me up here. Let's go. So yeah, that will be fascinating. I if I'm a guessing man, I'm saying I'll bump up what Shu's saying a little bit more. I'll go like 25 mil, and maybe everybody's happy with that number. That just sounds like a nice number, right? 25 million a year? Yeah, not bad. Hey, by the way, who's older? Or who do you think is older, I should say? Derek Favors or Tristan Thompson? These guys are both like somehow under 30.
Yeah.
But they both feel to me like they're closer to 40. Shu, if you had to pick one, Favors or Tristan Thompson?
Well, I know Favors is 28. Thompson is... are they both the same age? Oh, wait, let's...
I'm going to look up...
I think, do you know the answer to this question?
Well, I mean, the answer is really subjective. Who do you just feel like is way older? Yeah, Tristan Thompson's 29.
Favors feels older, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, Favors feels like he's been around since like 2004.
I remember talking to him as a rookie with the New Jersey Nets. So, like,
good point.
You know, that's... That was when they were really bad, too, that one year when they were really, really bad. So, yeah, I think he feels a little bit older.
Even though he's younger than Tristan Thompson by a year, but they both feel like they've been around 15 years easily. All right, well, let's keep it going here. Here's a fun question looking at the entire list. I'll actually give the entire list for everybody just listening. It's Van Vliet, then it's Ingram 2, Gallinari at 3, Montrezl Harrell at 4, Dragic at 5, Bogdan Bogdanovic at 6, Christian Wood at 7, Bertans at 8. We talked about him recently on a Beach Steppin' podcast. Melo and Dwight Howard. Those are the 10 intriguing free agents to shoot. And then you sprinkle in a bunch of other guys sort of related. But...
Yeah, I kind of cheated. So, yeah, like, yeah, Melo and Dwight necessarily aren't in the top 10, but, like, I cheated to link some related free agents to certain guys so that I can put basically, like, 30 people on the list.
Yeah, it's such a what a trick there from Shu. But I wanted to ask you this. Shu, pretend you're a GM. Which player on that list, your list of those 10 guys, would give you the most pause in, like, considering signing them? And maybe it's Van Vliet or Ingram already, or is it another guy? Like, where do you, like, go, I like him, but I don't know.
Dragic, probably. I mean, he's 35. He's injured currently. I think that's it. I mean, it's basically age. I mean, obviously, like, let's... put Melo and Dwight to the side. Like, okay. Those two guys give me the most pause, obviously. but as far as the legit, like, these guys are rotation players on good teams. I would, you know, I would say Dragic just because of the age and injury history. I mean, not only did he hurt his foot, but I mean, he was lugging around a huge knee brace all season. So,
yeah,
like that's probably it.
Yeah, the Heat are interesting. Let's get into them because you've got him, Crowder, Solomon Hill, Derek Jones Jr., Myers Leonard, and Haslam are impending unrestricted free agents. Now, they own, I think, the bird rights for all six of those players, so they can exceed the salary cap if they want to re-sign their own guys. But then they've got the whole Bam thing and his extension. Like, they obviously made the finals. They were a feel-good story. Number five seed, you know, riding that Jimmy Butler coffee wave all the way to the finals. But, like, is there any concern if you're... And then, of course, they're worrying. They're looking ahead to 2021 for the real big names, possibly with Pat Riley, like Giannis and whoever. What do they do here, I think, is the ultimate thing. Like, do you sort of try and keep the squad together, you know, including Dragic, and like, wow, we got something here. We could compete in the East and for a championship. Or is it, like, sort of one of these, like, just lightning strikes in a bottle, sort of in this bubble, lightning strikes in a bubble here, and it's like, let's not get too excited with what happened here. What would you do, or what do you think, Shu?
Oh, I wouldn't pass up the opportunity to go for it again. Like, I definitely wouldn't do that. But okay. I think maybe you do two things. One, before free agency opens, you are on the phone with a lot of different teams looking at if there's any upgrades you can make via trade without necessarily hurting your cap space for 2021. So is there anybody on a one-year deal or one with 1 year remaining on their deal that you can grab from somebody? An Oladipo might be an answer to that question. And then number two, if that's not available, then you try to bring it back. You know, option two is to bring it back on 1 year deals for like Dragic primarily and Crowder to see if you can, you know, run it back without, again, tapping into next year's cap space. You know, I don't know exactly what that cap space would be, but I'm curious, does trying to preserve that cap space prevent them from signing Adebayo to an extension? Like, I haven't really thought about that too deeply, but I think it might. You know, they might have to hold off on an extension for him. Although I'm looking at it now, Iguodala has a team option for 2021-22, so that sort of makes things a little bit simpler. So maybe they probably can sign Adebayo to an extension this year that would kick in next year. And still have the max cap space that they're going to want next year. And of course, heck, they got Jimmy Butler without max cap space last year, so
right.
Maybe it doesn't matter.
Right. What do you think, Lee?
Well, I think though that is one of the issues though, that if they do extend Adebayo now, it would eat into what they have for Giannis potentially next season. I think that's one of the sticking points that the Heat are potentially going to say, listen, just hold off. But his camp, Bam's camp, are going to be like, no, pay us now. We want that. Because, you know, I mean, guy can get injured and obviously all those things are uncertain going forward. So, you know, with Jimmy on his big deal as well, it's going to be very interesting to see how the Heat do bring it back next season. Because I agree, I think they should bring Dragic back, but I wouldn't be offering him anything more than a one-year deal at this point. I don't know. I don't know what he's worth. I mean, he came off a pretty decent deal there with Miami, but... I mean, he probably still gets 10 to 12 million, I would think, on a one-year deal there.
I would think so, yeah.
You know, at least.
Yeah.
You know, I think Oladipo, that's, you know, throwing him out there because he's kind of linked to the Heat as well. I think he would be good as a sort of one-year option for them that is potentially also almost a safety net if they don't get Giannis.
Right.
You know, that Oladipo's still young and he's been there and they can then maybe extend him. So, but they always seem to figure out a way to get what they want, Miami, as well. Hey, by the way, how is your relationship with Iguodala these days, Shumes? Because you and him used to have a bit of a...
That's my guy,
yeah.
You know? It's all good-hearted. That's my guy. Like, from back in his days in Philly, that's been my guy. He's can be ornery at times, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
But
he's just like you, isn't he?
Yeah.
It's all in good fun, you know. Like, I like to come at him for his free throw shooting, and
that's what
and
I was going to say.
Whatever.
Like, he was an 82% free throw shooter at one point. This season, I mean, okay, let's take this season off because he was only there for a little bit of time. He shot 40%. He's down to like 58% the season before in Golden State. How does a guy get worse at shooting free throws?
That's a good question. I used to get on him about it too, and then he was really improved. And then he made that series they beat the Bulls in Philly. Didn't he make two free throws at the end to win that game five, I believe it was?
I think you're right, yeah.
And I used to get on him about his free throw shooting, and he got better, and I don't know. He's
So are you saying are you saying he's declined at the free throw line because you're not there to get on?
Yeah, that's probably it. Yeah. You know, I haven't. You know, I'm like Lee and Steph Curry. You know, I'm his free throw shooting coach.
His guru. Yeah.
Okay. I used to hate, like, Lee. You could tell me that, like, he used to shoot it. There was one point where he was shooting it with a really Iguodala with a really high arc.
Yeah.
Like he would purposely put some extra arc on it, and I was like, that's just like giving it more chance to go awry, like unless you're in the.
Well, you know, but yeah, you want a more arc than a flatter free throw for sure. I
mean, yeah, but there's a happy medium.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, I've been scraping the ceiling. As soon as it hits iron, it's gone because it's got too much weight coming down.
Yeah.
You didn't have the soft touch. Okay, well, I didn't know this that you had this relationship with Iguodala. You got to get back on him for hitting these free throws.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So, okay, I don't know if anyone's firing up the trade machine here, but you guys are throwing around this idea of like, well, go get Oladipo. You know, go get him for a year. What's that gonna take to entice the Pacers? Who, yeah, they might be, you know, handcuffed a little bit if Oladipo's already like, oh, I'm leaving here, guys. But can somebody put something together that makes sense? What do you got, Shu? You're shaking your head.
Hero's too much, right? You're not trading Hero for him.
Nope.
You trading Kendrick Nunn?
Yeah, I would in a heartbeat.
Oladipo. is that you know, make the Pacers interested if Oladipo says I'm out of here? Like, What are they settling for, you know?
Right.
I imagine there's other packages out there that are probably better than what the Heat can offer.
I would think so.
You know, they're going to, you know, they have Kendrick Nunn and what, you know? I don't know.
Olynyk.
Olynyk's contract.
Yeah.
Olynyk, you have Sabonis and Turner.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing with Kelly Olynyk?
Right.
So.
Move on from Turner if you're the Pacers.
Oh, I mean, yeah, where you could ship Olynyk somewhere else too. I don't know. It's a good question. Pacers are just a fascinating team with what they do this year, just in general, both with Oladipo, with Turner and Sabonis, with their coaching position. They're fascinating too.
They're a wild card. A couple of old guys you did have on your list there, we slipped them in, Melo and Dwight. Which one do you have more faith in, like, to be able to contribute, like, let's say next season? Sort of tough.
Probably Dwight. Like, I think you can get, like, Dwight is going to give you defense and rebounding. I think you can count on that.
Mm-hmm.
Carmelo is there for offense, but he's not a very efficient offensive scorer. Like, even alongside Lillard and McCollum, like, he had some flurries of offense, but like overall, over 82 games, over 48 minutes, he's not going to be very efficient. You know, he shoots a ton from mid range, and he's not doesn't rank very highly as a mid range shooter. I'll give you the stat that I included in there. He shot 40% from mid range, which was 60th among 84 players with at least 100 mid range attempts. So like. It's like you think of him, hey, Melo mid-range, you know, he's money from there. But like, you know, he had like, what, didn't he hit like five in a row in one of those playoff games?
Yeah.
And like Lee was like, yeah, Melo just earned himself another contract. Like, well, Lee, look at the macro scale for a second. And like, and my other thing with Melo is even in Portland, like who other than Portland's going to want him, one? And if it's like, hey, you know, he can always come back to Portland. Like, well, okay, what if Ariza's healthy? What if Rodney Hood is healthy? What if Gary Trent is healthy? And what if Zach Collins is healthy? Like, okay, if you need a bucket on a last minute possession, Yeah, Melo's going to be one of the two guys on the floor with Lillard and McCollum and Nurkic. But over 48 minutes, like, what is his role compared to those other guys? Mm-hmm. And is he willing to play that role? You know, is he willing to, you know, play behind Ariza and Zach Collins? Like, I don't know.
Guys, Melo's going back to MSG, baby. Paul's getting traded there. Yeah, then Melo's coming. Yeah.
But, you know, I know when you pointed that out, Shu, it just felt, though, that Melo, you know, he gave himself another chance in the league because it felt like he played better than the stats showed for Portland. And again, that sort of suited him where it's like, it's almost like Olympic Melo. Just sit in the corner, we'll throw you the ball and hit some threes because he seemed to do that. And the defense has always been awful. But when you compare it to how it ended in Houston to how it ended in Portland, I would say he's at least generated more interest in teams. Like, we can have Melo, you know, somewhere on the roster anyway.
Yeah, there's a role for him. The question is that role satisfactory for him?
Right.
Like, you know,
right.
is he okay? Like, you know, I can't forget they think they want me to come off the bench, quote, like, mm-hmm. things like, yeah, we want you to come off the bench. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Be the second unit guy, like, and be, you know, like, you're not. I mean, I like the guy. I love the guy. Like, he's another guy that I've gotten to know covering, like, USA Basketball and stuff. And I love him and I root for him. But, like, he's not. The numbers just don't. When you look at it overall, you're going to see the numbers just don't match up. And you need and you should have a more efficient scorer next to. I mean, if you have Lillard and McCollum, and, hey, maybe they don't keep both of those guys. Who knows? You need the other guys around them to score efficiently, to shoot threes more than twos, more than long twos, to, you know, and to be really good on catch and shoot. And yeah, Melo is good for, you know, last second, you know, Lillard's double teams, swing him the ball and he can get that to that one shot, one dribble pull up, you know, really good. But like I said, over 82 games, over 48 minutes, just the numbers don't really make a ton of sense.
Do you think he's at the point in his career? I mean, I'm throwing it out there. I know we don't have the answer, but will he just start ring chasing at some point here? Like, will he just say, all right, let me just get a ring? He's going to the Hall of Fame as it is. I'm sure we all agree with that. But, like, you know, go get one. Go find one. Maybe it's with LeBron in L.A. or something like that, like his best chance at that, or another team. Because he's kind of, I don't know, maybe he does the Vince Carter thing. Maybe he never does it, right? Vince never cave to ring chase. He's like, no, I want to keep playing or trying to get minutes here or there and obviously help young guys and stuff like that. He never did it, so maybe Melo follows that route as well. But I don't know, at some point I just feel like Melo's just, for that resume, he's got all the gold, the Olympic golds, and obviously he's got a lot of accolades, like in All-Stars and All-NBAs and huge point totals. Get a ring, get a Mitch Richmond ring at the end of your career there, Melo. I don't know, could be in play.
Yeah, I'm not going to try to pretend to know what's in his head as far as what he wants.
Right.
Yeah, we'll see.
Within this article, you had, like, because you're a numbers guy, you're always keeping us honest, and I think you're one of the best at it. I will say that. You know, Hollinger's incredible. I mean, guys that can write about the numbers, but, like, make it accessible, I think, to a lot of people. So, again, kudos for you. You've been doing it a long time, just like Hollinger. It's all the Johns and Pelton and stuff like that. But you had numbers to know. Was there a favorite number to know in the article? And like, why would you pick that one out?
It's Davis Bertans, 65. He had 65 three-pointers in the first 6 seconds of the shot clock, which led the league and was 11 more than any other player. J.J. Redick was second with 54.
Wow.
And I like it because it sort of tells you who Davis Bertans is, like, it's like, that is Davis Bertans. Like, you can, right, and you can envision, like, Ish Smith dribbling up the middle of the floor, Bertans running up the sideline on either side or whatever. Smith passes the ball, he catches the ball 29 feet from the basket and just lets it fly immediately. Like, right. And that's, I mean, that's who it is. Like, that's amazing. Like, he didn't play in the seeding games. He came off the bench and he had 11 more threes in the first 6 seconds of the shot clock than anybody else in the league. Like, that is,
wow.
I mean, that's who it is. Like, I remember watching one game, dude came on the floor and, like, literally 3 seconds later, he had already shot a three. And it was,
Didn't he hit like 8 in a row or something against the Hornets, I think it was?
I forget. Something but yeah, like that. He's a gem. He's a joy to watch.
We talked about him. What's Bertans worth? I mean, because he is instant offense, but that's it. From what I saw of Bertans, there's no defense, there's no rebounding, there's no facilitating an offense. It's literally like, if you throw him the ball, he's going to fire away. And he's not a bad shooter. He's a good shooter. But what is a guy like that worth?
It's a good question. I don't know. It's got to be, I imagine it's north of 10 a year.
Yes, I think so.
Because he's not a shooter that like needs space or, because he's so big, mm-hmm. he's got a high release and a quick release that it's not like, you can negate Duncan Robinson a little bit by just staying in his shirt. Like you could be in Davis Bertans' shirt and he's still going to shoot.
Oh yeah.
So like there's value in that. And he's a really good fit. If the Wizards keep, Beal and Wall, then he's a good fit alongside those two guys. He's obviously one of those guys that would fit really well alongside a team with a star or a two star.
Yeah, I mean, he's high volume, high percentage 3-point shooter. We were saying it on the last podcast talking about him. I mean, he was putting up these numbers. Now, yeah, you're saying, Lee, this is the Wizards. They didn't play a lick of defense. I mean, it's almost like a pointless season. You know, Beal's going for 30-plus. It was just like, let's play glorified pickup basketball. I do agree with that. But at the same time, he was putting up all these numbers, Bertans was, with Ish Smith, who I like, solid, whatever, Shabazz Napier as your point guard, basically Beal as your point guard a lot of the time. I'd love to see what he could do with John Wall, who is... I think oddly underrated as a playmaker. I think it's probably because we haven't seen him play in so long, or feels like it's been a decade since we've seen John Wall play. And you think of him just like super fast and still of a scorer that can struggle with his shot, but he's a hell of a playmaker. I know he's always up there in assists per game. So I would just like to see him. I think the Wizards are definitely committed to bringing him back, whatever that deal is, because there was almost an agreement, shoe, correct me if I'm wrong, like with, you said it, him not even playing in the bubble games. It's like, we're so far back of even forcing this Mega Bowl game, you know, like, don't worry about it. Like, I think that was like an agreement of like, hey, we're with you. We want you for the long term here when we get Wall back and we got Beal. That's sort of how I read it. So I think he will be there at whatever price they agree on.
You would think so, but that doesn't mean other teams won't come calling.
True. True.
Yeah. So I think I there's just value in a guy that one can shoot and two is going to shoot quick, because those dudes scare the bleep out of opposing defenses, right? Yep. And so it's not only their value in their own shooting, but in the gravity that they have and the things that they open up. We saw that with Robinson, obviously.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Do you think the Bucks do come calling then at all? I mean,
that's a good question. I mean, they don't have cap space, I don't think.
No, but I just wonder if they make a few moves because of how things ended there. I mean, does Korver come back? I doubt it.
You'd have to be moving Bledsoe in some
Bledsoe,
sort of scenario.
I think they try to tweak something, because if they want to convince Giannis that they're going for it, they kind of have to make some move. Now, I'm not sure if Bertans, moves
hey, Giannis,
the needle
we
for
want
them.
You to stay. We got this guy. Yeah. Jack 3. Just give him the ball.
But, at least, again, he's the guy on the floor at the end of the game where, Giannis can throw the ball to him and he's going to shoot it. He's going to shoot it no matter what. It's such a weird season for him because of what happened in Washington, where they were scoring at just a ton of points. Everyone was scoring, but they were getting killed and there was no defense. But he might have used that as a platform to really cash in. So is he inflated? Is his value inflated? Or is he actually a decent shooter and a decent player and can contribute to a good team?
You know who really, really needs a player like that is Philadelphia. They need a dude can just shoot and shoot right away. Like, yeah. I remember talking to somebody like, they need, if they're going to have Embiid and Simmons, two guys that shouldn't be shooting from the outside. I know Embiid does, but really, he's so much better inside than outside. They need multiple guys that can run around, create havoc, and just keep shooting. Obviously, they miss Redick incredibly this past season.
And that's why for the last couple of years, it feels like Klay Thompson's name comes up as like a dream scenario for Sixers fans. Like that type of guy, like you're saying, Shu. So it's like, you know, Bertans is the super, super poor man's version, I would say, of Klay Thompson offensively, but that makes a lot of sense. From your list, because we're talking about like Van Vliet, okay, he maybe stays with the Raptors. Ingram, we think he stays with the Pelicans. Even Bertans, you know, it sounds like you sort of agree that he probably could be staying with the Wizards. But of your guys on this list, if you were putting money on one of these guys changing teams, Shu, like who would you be laying some coin on that they're like, you know, this guy will not be with the team he currently is on when he plays next season? Who would you put it on?
Maybe Bogdanovich. Bogdanovich.
Really?
Well, here's the thing. Like, unless the Kings are trading Buddy Hield, like, because Buddy Hield is their highest paid player. His extension kicks in this year at 4 years and...
84, wasn't it?
$88 million.
Wow.
De'Aaron Fox is eligible for an extension that would start next year. Mm-hmm. So he's on in the last year of his rookie deal. And so are you going to commit a ton of money to three backcourt guys for a team that finished 12th in the West this year and isn't necessarily going to make the playoffs next year? Like, that's a lot of money to commit to three guys who are, you know, don't all play the same position, obviously, but, you know, Hield and Bogdanovich play the same position, and those three guys barely played. Like, I looked to see, like, how many total minutes those three guys played together. It was, like, 200 or something this past season, so it's not a lot. So that's a lot. I mean, and they have a new GM, Monty McNair, who came over from the Rockets. So I don't know, you know, obviously that, you know, switches things up. Who knows, you know, how he feels about Hield versus Bogdanovich.
Isn't that the question? It's like, which one of those two guys do you keep?
Yeah.
Bogdanovich or Hield? And like you're saying, do you try and trade Hield? Like, are we trading the guy that won't return our texts?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Who wants to go somewhere else?
Yeah.
Who liked when someone proposed him going to Philadelphia on Instagram.
Right, that's why I was sort of shocked when you said Bogdanovich, because I'm just convinced the Kings say, no, we want to keep him, sign him, and look to move Buddy Hield, but maybe not.
Well, trading is a lot easier said than done. Trading a guy on a $25 million contract is a lot, you know, 80, you know, 25 next season, but 88 over four. That's a big commitment to make for a guy who hasn't, you know, Buddy Hield is a great shooter and would be a good fit in certain spots, but it's not like he's played for a winner yet. We don't know, you know. So just because, you know, letting Bogdanovich walk is a sort of a simpler move than trading Buddy Hield, I guess that would be it. Because, like, I guess, you know what? You know, we forgot Gallinari. He's the obvious.
Yeah, that was my pick.
Yeah, my bad. I skipped over Gallinari when I was looking at that list when you asked that question. So he's the obvious one that's going to move. He's not. Didn't he tweet out today like, "Hey, where am I going next?"
Exactly. Yeah.
I missed that.
It showed him pictures on all of his uniforms so far, and then in the middle is him with a completely blank jersey,
like a literally an NBA team.
Yeah, it was definitely, "I'm not coming back to Oklahoma City." You know, like, there was nothing like, "Hey, you know, looking to run it back." You know, it was, "Hey, where am I going next?" So Gallinari is your obvious answer.
Okay.
And it will be interesting to see. You know, he's 32. But like I wrote, like, he's one of four guys who have shot 40% or better on at least 300 threes in each of the last two seasons. So, if you want good offensive team, you would need a four who can shoot, and he's that dude, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he is that guy who can, who spaced the floor at the four position, isn't necessarily the defensive liability that a Bertans is. So, you know, he could be a really good fit. It's just a question of, is he going to get a long-term deal? Would he just, hey, I'll take the mid-level from the best team that wants me,
right?
You know, type of thing. And then we'll play again next year. Maybe that's what he does. We'll see.
What do you think, Lee? Any predictions on a Gallinari, or where would you like to see him, or where does he fit great?
Well, again, on a contender that needs another guy who can shoot, because he was really good for the Thunder, I thought, in the playoffs at times down there in the bubble. You know, a couple of games there against the Rockets. He was really, really good. So, I mean, someone like Philadelphia could probably use him as well. Milwaukee, again, I'm sort of throwing the Bucks out there a little bit again because he is a sort of guy who offensively is very, very good and is capable of spreading the floor. So, you know, who else is there sort of contending? I wonder if he'd be a good fit in Brooklyn too, alongside Kevin and Kyrie up there, another experienced guy. I mean, that might be it. I think JD's actually got the tweet there that he put out this morning.
Oh, my God, that is amazing. Look, that's a very Brooklyn Nets-like fake jersey.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, you know, the Nets are, of course, a bit of an unknown quantity until we see them on the floor, but they'd be looking for veterans, I think, who, you know, they can rely on at the end of games who, you know, I mean, you know the ball's going to be in Kyrie or KD's hands, but there's going to be those moments where a guy like him on the floor, if you leave Gallinari open, he's going to be pretty reliable at knocking down those shots, so... You know, yeah, I think one of those teams that feels that it's close to winning the championship would like him.
Seeing Gallinari there in a Nuggets jersey made me think of something when we were talking Melo that I wanted to ask both of you. Did you see the Nuggets tweet about who's the greatest Nuggets player of all time and their little graphic? Mutombo, Alex English. I think Nix Van Exel made the graphic even, but of course, why I'm asking this, getting to this, no Melo. What do you think, Shu? I mean, the ultimate disrespect or just like the fact like, hey man, he's still playing. We can't put him on the graphic.
No, that was some unnecessary shade. Ooh. Completely unnecessary. And I don't know if it was intent, like how intentional it was, but right. Like, come on. It's you know, silly.
What do you think, Lee?
I'm trying to see who it was because I remember they were good players. I think Chauncey Billups even made it.
Yeah, I think Billups was on there. Was Jokic maybe on there?
Yeah, too? Jokic was on there too. Yeah, so you know, I mean, Alex English, like it's hard to bump him off. I mean, he's no one scored more points in the entire decade of the 80s than Alex English, so he gets on there.
Well, hold on, I'm saying I couldn't believe Nick Van Exel. I'm a big Nick Van Exel fan. I got a Lakers Nick Van Exel jersey, but. Yeah,
he was awesome. On the Nuggets.
My guess is like whatever intern or guy that was doing this Photoshop is like, well, we can't put Melo on here, right? Because he's like, I don't know, is that tampering? Can we be somehow tampering if we put him on this thing? It's just there it is right here. It's Van Exel, Mutombo, English, Jokic, and Billups. Okay, we got them all. Who is your favorite Nugget of all time? Oh, the question is just straight up favorite Nugget. Wow, I like McDonald's personally. Nice 10-pack, a couple sweet and sour sauces. But the disrespect, the shade. Okay, I'm with Schumann. That's shade. Lee, you're trying to like say, oh, I don't know, all these guys deserve to be on the list. Well, put another one on. Put Melo on.
Chauncey was on the Nuggets for like 2.5 years.
Hey, don't worry about it. He was great.
But they went to the conference finals with him. So yeah.
And Melo.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, you know, like. Like Alex English, that's the spot for Melo. It's hard to bump Alex English off that spot. I mean,
no, yeah. Again, it's Van Exel that you would be taking off, not Alex English. Stop saying that, please. All right, a couple more questions, and we got to let you go here. You know, as I said at the top there, you had these 10 guys, but you got sneaky with it. You basically had like 30 guys sort of sprinkled into this whole thing. Who was the most intriguing related free agent? Because you do have that with each guy, like that you tacked on in this article, like that you're like, okay, yeah, like that is. That's a fascinating question about this guy's free agency. Who you got?
Well, I mean, I think the most important is Joe Harris, just because, you know, I tacked him onto Bertans just because of their, you know, off-ball shooting.
Yeah.
Because he plays for a team that's trying to contend for a title next year, and he is an ideal complement next to Irving and Durant. I'm also intrigued by Harry Giles. Like, I think this is a dude that was, like, I think at one point coming out of high school, maybe he was the best player in his class.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously had injury history, missed his entire rookie season. And then last year, the Kings declined his fourth-year option, which means he's an unrestricted free agent this year. He's still young. And, like, there were times this year where I was watching him, I was like, oh, he's pretty good. Like, he was a nice, like, sort of versatile, big, can do things on both ends of the floor. I think he was sort of can be, you know, long and disruptive defensively. I think for him, like, he's got to be able to shoot some threes. Like, he's got to be able to step out and shoot threes, especially if he wants to sort of be the more versatile kind of big that you would expect, a guy who could play four or five, like play five on a second unit, play four, you know, if you've got a bigger five. So I'm kind of curious as to see what happens with him. Like, he's got some talent, he's got some bounce. He's a guy that, you know, has fallen pretty hard since where he was, but I think has the ability to bounce back up. And obviously it would be, you know, with all these guys on the Kings, it would be interesting to see them in an environment that's not a team with the second longest playoff drought in NBA history.
Yeah, it would be nice. Also, wicked to have a guy named Harry balling out. Not a lot of Harrys that I can remember in NBA history. You know, and Harrison Barnes does.
Was there a Harry Gallatin or something like that? That's Harry. A Hall of Famer?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I just looked it up. Harry Gallatin, a.k.a. the horse, a.k.a. the farmer, Harry Gallatin. From Illinois, Roxana, Illinois. I wonder if Trey Kirby's dad knows him or something like that. Yeah, I guess he is a Hall of Famer. 1991 he went in, played for the Bullets and the Knicks. So, yeah, we need another great Harry in our lives. So Harry Giles would be nice. Okay, let's wrap it up like this, Chu. What's your boldest free agency prediction here? You can go anywhere you want with this. Give us something spicy.
I don't know if I have anything, but I do think the trade market will be spicier than the free agency market.
Okay.
You know, with guys like, obviously, Chris Paul at the top of the list as a potential trade. You know, the fact that, you know, the Thunder parted ways with Billy Donovan is a clear sign that they're going in a different direction. Letting Gallinari walk is obviously an easier thing to do than trading Chris Paul, but... Mm-hmm. There's certainly be some teams in the market, and if he goes to Milwaukee, well, then that becomes really, really interesting if they could put together a deal. And then you have Oladipo, as we mentioned. You have Holiday, as we mentioned, as a possible trade target for some of these teams. So I just think the trade market's going to be more interesting than the free agency market. Right. I'm glad we could dedicate an hour here to the
to the worst free agency class of all time.
Exactly. It's kind of amazing that we've been able to talk this long about this free agent list with Melo and Dwight Howard in the top 10.
In 2021, we're still talking about these two guys. No, you're right. You're right. Okay, so that your take is that just we will see, in theory, some juicy trades, some big names at least being moved around.
I think, obviously, there's a potential for that.
Yeah.
Like I said, trading a guy that's making $40 million is a lot easier said than done. But, the potential is there for some teams, especially just with, I think next year is going to be wide open. So, like,
yeah,
you know, like the Lakers aren't unbeatable whatsoever.
Mm.
And the East was obviously wide open, and the Nets are an unknown.
Yeah.
And the Warriors are coming back, but they're obviously missing a big piece from the last time they won. So, I think things will be wide open, and teams will want to go for it. And a way to go for it is to make a trade. And shuffle the deck.
Do you think the Sixers trade one of their big names?
I don't think so. I think they got to give Doc a chance to let those two guys work together. But they, you know, if they've got to do everything they can to get off of the Horford contract. He's been one of my favorite players the last several years, but they just need it's a tough question. I mean, Even if you just start with Embiid and Simmons, it's a tough deal. Like, are you playing two guys inside and three out? Or is Embiid out? Is Simmons out? Like, the ideal is you put four shooters around or four guys around one hub, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Both of those guys should be a hub, not the other. What, you know, they're the hub aspect of it and not the shooting, and the same thing with Horford. So that's why obviously that, you know, didn't really work. I think they definitely give Doc a chance to let those two guys a chance to shuffle the deck as far as how they play. The question is, how much can they shuffle the deck as far as the supporting cast?
Right.
Right, yeah. Right. And if you can convince the Kings to take Al Horford for Buddy Hield, good luck with that. But you know, maybe attach something to it, and that intrigues them enough, especially if they, like you already talked about, they're like, well, we got too many damn guards. Sure, let's bring in old vet Al Horford. And again, they would have to, I would think, Sixers have to attach a young prospect. I mean, I can't imagine they're parting ways with Dybul or something like that.
How many years in a row has Horford been to the playoffs? That'd be a...
It would be the J.J. Redick situation. Yeah, right, right. Wow, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, he must have. He's been there a while. Because, right, he was with Boston.
Yeah, the Hawks went every year for 5 years, I guess, and then...
I think even
longer. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 straight. So since 2013, 2014 was the last time he missed
it. Oh, wow, I thought it was longer than that, if I'm being honest. All right. We will see. Shu, thank you so much, man, for jumping on here. You're right. I can't believe we went an hour plus on on this article that probably took you 10 minutes to whip together. No, but I really appreciate it. Where can people follow you? What's the easiest way, Shu?
Oh, Twitter, JohnSchuhmann. That's the German spelling.
That second H gets you.
Schumann, I can't stand your name. I love saying it. I hate writing it. I have to check every time I go to spell your name.
H is kind of rare. Yeah, there's probably more people out there with only the first H.
But unless
you go around Louisville. If you do a little Facebook search of Schumann with the second H, and you'll see a lot of people around the city of Louisville.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There you go.
Hashtag will actually be there on the spelling of the name. Have you played, I'm sure the answer is no, because you're not an idiot, but you've been at least staying busy getting some shots up on some sort of net, Shu? Like, how's the jumper looking?
I have touched the basketball once. It was like 3 weeks ago. There was a Sunday afternoon. I went to a park and shot by myself. And yeah, I miss my indoor pickup run desperately, but it sucks. I mean, we're sort of living in this new reality and trying to make the most of it. But then every once in a while you think, man, I haven't played basketball since March.
It's depressing.
Freaking sucks.
It really is. I know there are a lot of more important things in the world to worry about, but it is depressing. I'm sure a lot of listeners are hoopers as well, and it's tough not to have that, Lele. I know you're trying to get the odd shot up with your boys out in the backyard or whatever in the driveway, but it's not the same, is it?
No,
you're just kicking
their
ass.
Yeah. We have a mini hoop and that I'm firing away on, but yeah, it's not the same. But I'm surprised they've even got the hoops up there, hoop issue, because here in Atlanta, there's no hoops on any public outdoor rims.
They put them back up. They were down for a while, and then they put them back up. Like, I wouldn't go play against anybody.
No.
Like, but here, you know, you can find a park on the random afternoon that's empty.
Right.
Especially me. I mean, I don't have a real job, so I can go whenever, go in the middle of the day. I've actually turned into more of a runner than a basketball player.
There you go.
I did my you'll be proud of me. I did my longest run, maybe of my life, the other day. My last run was 7 miles. In fact, I'm fixing to go out right after we're done here.
Wow.
7 miles. I ran more than an hour, which is me from 6 months ago would be like, that's just stupid. Why would you run?
So you've obviously hit the part where you, like, I assume, like doing it now, or you almost feel like you need to do it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, once the season shut down in March, I was like, all right, I guess I'm going to exercise every day, and then it becomes a habit.
Yep.
I alternate the runs with the regular workouts. And
good for you. Do you have a goal in mind, like moving forward? Like, are you going to try and run a half marathon or something?
No. I've done 5Ks, and I guess I could do a 10K now.
Yep,
guess I have that ability, but no, I have no... Like, I would do that. The only reason I would care to do is, hey, it's a charity thing, and it's a local, you know, thing, and of course we can't do that now. It's all, virtual... Not, you know, stuff. So, but you know, yeah, I figured you'd be proud of me running.
Very proud.
Running 5 or 6 miles every other day.
Are you listening to music? Nothing or podcasts while you're running?
Either music or podcasts. If I'm backed up on my podcasts, I'll listen to that. And then otherwise, I have a running mix that I listen to. I can't do the Flannery thing. Like, that dude's just nuts. He listens to nothing. He runs like 50 miles listening to absolutely nothing.
I think it's incredible.
He is just loony.
He's also like out the door at like 4 a.m. and it's like 10 o'clock and he's been running for 6 hours off in the woods. Like you said, like the, you know, elevation and 50 miles. And you're like, it's, I mean, I'm a runner, but that is next level stuff. Like, it's you know, it's meditation. I get that for some, for you know, both male and female runners and stuff like that. But wow, guy's nuts. Guy's nuts. All right. Anyway, we're rambling now. Shu, thank you so much. Get your questions in for this week's Beach Steppin' podcast. We have locked that in. We're going to do it at the end of the week, so you got lots of time. Email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com, or you can tweet them in at nodunksinc. Go grab your No Dunks merchandise at nodunks.com. Got the t-shirts and the pins for you there. Subscribe to The Athletic. Still $1 a month. Can't believe it. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks for that offer. Tass, JD, and I will be back tomorrow, Wednesday, with a special guest, Ben Standig, from The Athletic. We're going to break down, The Athletic's actually doing the first NBA agents survey to get an idea of where they think the NBA is headed and where it is right now, and talking about players and stuff like that. So that'll be fun. We'll do a little breakdown of that. So check that tomorrow. Subscribe to the podcast. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Let's put Schumann on the spot here, filling in for Tass. You got any wise words or some weird quote for us to end this bad boy?
Oh, good question. I'll just say this, if everybody's watching on Big Pun Forever. I didn't drop any tasty puns on this podcast, but I am wearing my Big Pun podcast, my Big Pun t-shirt just for you guys.
Embrace the day, people. You could stay. Ooh.